This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Raise Your Game. I'm Tasha Fazil. So there was a recent survey done in the States where 69% of the people polled said that they were busy or very busy. Women in particular, between the age of 30 and 60, were reporting that they regularly sacrifice sleep, recreation, hobbies, and family. Author and entrepreneur Ali Worthington has an issue with this. Because if we aren't sleeping, taking care of our bodies, and doing things we enjoy with people we love, then what in the world are we so busy doing? And of course, she's written a book about it called Breaking Busy. So I catch up with Ali to find out what exactly that means.
Well, for me, it comes from a story in my life. A few years ago, my husband and I, we were both working full time. I was running my own company. He had a job with regular human hours. For those of us who are entrepreneurs or running our own company, I was working around the clock. And we have five children. We have five sons. So we're balancing our careers and our family at the same time. And at one point, I looked at him and said, let's just sell everything and live off the land and just pay for Wi-Fi and Starbucks. And I said, I don't think we need to go that far, but let's figure out how we can fix things. And what I said to him that night was, the busyness is breaking me. I've got to learn how to break the busyness in my life before it really does break me, because I realized at that point that I just couldn't keep up with all the pressure that I put on myself.
How do you define busy? I mean, it's quite a subjective term. How do you know whether you're being productive or being busy? How did you decide for yourself?
Well, I have to say it's very humbling to write a book about busyness and then to accidentally be in conversation with someone and they say, how are you doing? And I say, busy. Because it's reflexive at this point, because everyone, it's almost a badge of honor to be busy. So I definitely don't teach people in the book that we need to be minimal, that we need to cut everything out and, you know, move to a farm somewhere. For me, a life that is overly busy, that's so busy that it's going to break us, it feels frazzled and harried. We almost feel like we're on this hamster wheel or treadmill, going and going and going and getting nowhere and staying stressed out in an unhealthy way. I'm all for us living a full life where we are doing great things, but we're focused on accomplishing our goals, accomplishing our dreams, and actually enjoying life along the way.
So people don't always realize that they're busy until it's too late. What are some warning signs that may indicate that you're too busy, you've gone too far?
Oh, there are so many. What comes to mind at first for me is an out-of-control emotions. If I am more likely to get angry or to get sad, if I snap with a team member or someone else and it definitely wasn't called for, I realize that it's probably my schedule. I need to check myself, get to my schedule, and make sure that I have a little breathing space because I'm just running too hard. Another huge example of being overly busy is constant illness. For me, I went through a season of my life where I felt like I was always suffering from something, whether it was a sinus infection or a cold, and I couldn't get better until a doctor very wisely challenged me and said, do you think you're overly stressed? And I just wanted to laugh at him. Of course I'm overly stressed. Who wasn't? That was my thinking at the time. And he said, listen, you're going to have to learn how to deal with the stress in your life and make some decisions or you're not going to get better. So that was huge for me. Another biggie would be chronic lateness. Many times people who are, say, 15, 20 minutes late all the time, they're not doing it to be rude. They're doing it because they're just trying to fit too much in. You know, they're trying to make people happy, to just keep up the pace of demands that come at us in a regular day. And, of course, there's also self-medicating and excess. We think of self-medicating with food or any other thing like that, but it can come from spending hours, you know, binging on Netflix, or it can come from spending hours on Facebook or Pinterest or whatever it is. When we use it as a means to escape instead of spending time with things that really refreshes us, that's when things can be out of control.
Binging is considered bad when you're doing it on something that is not good for you. Is there such thing as binging on exercise?
Oh, absolutely. Honestly, that would be a handy problem to have for me. I've never struggled with that. But anything taken to the extreme can absolutely be that way. Lots of healthy things, when done to the extreme, can be unhealthy.
having your own business, as you say, you're working around the clock, but you're also, you know, doing that thing where you're pursuing your passion, your dream. So at what point did you decide that, yes, this is what you want, but you've also got to think about your priorities?
Well, I did this crazy New Year's resolution. Instead of pretending that I'm going to diet and lose weight or pretending that I'm going to start knitting sweaters for the poor, I'm not going to do either of those things. I decided my New Year's resolution was going to be just to figure out where I was spending my time. Because if I could get a real grasp on how I was spending all the minutes of my life, then I could figure out what to fix. So I started keeping a time diary of when I wasn't at work. And when I was on the computer, I used this app called Rescue Time. There's a lot of different apps, but that's the one I used. It actually tracked what I was doing on the computer. And what I learned was I was working a 12-hour workday, but I didn't have to. I was working a 12-hour workday because sometimes I was on YouTube watching a video about a baby sloth, or I was spending too much time on Facebook. And so when I learned to say, okay, these activities, they don't help me with my business. I'm going to do this stuff at night. I'm going to do this on the weekends, right, watch YouTube and relax and goof off. And I was able to cut my workday down to an 8-hour day. I was spending up to 4 hours a day on phone calls that were too long. I cut all my meetings down by like 75% and stopped wasting time during work, the workday, and that completely changed everything. So I just became very strict on how I spent my time, but I never would have done it if I hadn't have tracked my time in the first place.
You know, this book was written sort of specifically for women. Obviously, both men and women suffer from this problem of being too busy. But why did you decide that this message was something that you wanted to put across to women specifically?
Well, I think that women carry the burden more of feeling the need to be all things to all people. Women are the ones who, you know, we're not only working, we're not only entrepreneurs, we're not only mothers and spouses, but for many of us, we're also caring for our parents. So the burden on women to take care of everyone else at the same time, you know, building their dreams and working, it's really intense. For me, I wanted to dedicate it to other women who were doing that. Now, the funny thing is, I get email all the time from men who say, my wife got your book, and she started reading to me out of chapter so-and-so, and I read your book, and I can't believe it. It's a woman's book, but it was great. So that has been really fun because each chapter has the action steps to help people move forward in their life, and the men seem to really enjoy that.
How does being busy hold a man or a woman back from their full potential then?
When we are overly busy and we're not able to put our time and our resources into the things that are important in life, we end up wasting time. We end up taking care of all the little things that pop up instead of taking care of the really big, important things. So if we know we have a goal, say it's with our business, take our business to a certain level, but we can't let go of control and we're answering the phone all day, it's something that someone else could do for us, we're not going to be able to devote the time and energy to take the business to the next level. So staying overly busy with things that aren't important holds us back in big and little ways.
It is true what you say. I mean, a lot of the time our time gets eaten up doing things that we don't realize are really unnecessary. But also, you know, when we're busy, a lot of times it's in service to someone else. We're doing things for someone else. How do you deal with that guilt of having to separate yourself from some of these obligations or some of these things that you have to do in order to have more time for yourself?
It's such a great question. It's something that everyone struggles with. For me, I like to think about myself in the future when I'm making a decision. I use a formula called 10-10-10. So anything that I have to do, anything I have to decide, I will think, how will I feel about this decision in 10 minutes? And how will I feel about this decision in 10 days? How will I feel about this decision in 10 weeks? Very often, when someone needs me to do something for them or take on an obligation or responsibility, in that first 10, in the first 10 seconds, I feel great because I've made them happy, even though sometimes I know I don't have the time, the energy, or the resources to take care of this responsibility that I'm saying yes to. So when I think about it in terms of, how will I feel about that in 10 days or 10 weeks? I think about my future self and how I really can't say yes to that obligation. So that gives me the courage to be able to graciously say no to people. And what I've found is the more honest I am with people that I'm so sorry I can't take on this responsibility because of X, Y, and Z, people are very gracious and understanding for the most part when we're just honest with it. So I try to have this policy of just radical transparency about things and say, I'm over capacity. I've had to limit things out of my life. Thank you so much for the offer, but I can't do that in this season. And for the most part, people are very gracious and understanding.
All right. Well, you talk about capacity levels in the book. What are capacity levels and why is it important?
The thought that I had, it happened on a plane once. It's very funny. I was looking at my phone. I love my phone. Very attached to it. I sleep with it under my pillow, but at least I have it on Do Not Disturb. And I'm looking at the little battery symbol at the top with the percentage. And I realize I love that I know how much battery my phone has at all times. Mm. I know how much capacity it has. I know how much longer it can go. And I never get mad at my phone when my phone needs to recharge. However, I'm constantly frustrated at myself and other people sometimes because we need to recharge. We are over our capacity. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice if we just had this magic readout that would tell us, hey, I'm only at 10%.
That'd be amazing.
I have to go recharge,
yes.
Right? And then if we could tell with other people, like, whoa, Allie's at 30% today, better give her a little space. And we lived in a world where we just could tell what each other's capacity was in that day and be okay with it. It would be amazing. So it taught me to try to be more aware of my capacity, and it changes. And if it's a busy season at work, I'm going to have less capacity for everything else. So it just goes back and forth, and our capacity levels change sometimes daily and in different seasons.
I'm with Allie Worthington, the author of Breaking Busy, How to Find Peace and Purpose in a World of Crazy. So stay tuned because we'll be looking at more ways to battle burnout when we come back. This is Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Good morning. You're listening to Raise Your Game with me, Tasha Fasil. I'm with Allie Worthington. She's an author, an entrepreneur, and mother of five who, after experiencing all the classic symptoms of stress and burnout, decided to break the habits that were causing all of it. She wrote a book called Breaking Busy, How to Find Peace and Purpose in a World of Crazy. Now, Allie, just before we talked about how, you know, writing the book helped you practice what you preach in everyday life, like, you know, graciously saying no and learning how to prioritize. And you talked also about keeping a diary. So was putting your thoughts down or tracking your day an integral part of the process of breaking busy?
Absolutely. It made all the difference. And for me, trying to figure out where I could fit in writing a book on top of everything else was difficult. We made a family decision to dedicate Saturdays to book writing. So we really went about it, my husband and I, with our kids, in a very open way to say, hey, for the next 6 months, mom's going to be locked away in the master bedroom and she's just going to write all day on Saturdays. So we knew ahead of time what we were going into. We knew I wasn't going to be able to do things on Saturdays, that I was really putting a lot of boundaries there. But it helped us all because we knew it was just for a short season. So when I would be tempted to, we'd get an invitation to do something on a Saturday, it's very tempting to say yes, but I had to learn to discipline myself to put forth the time to write.
Right, and it's that discipline. Like, how do you develop discipline, you know, when you're so used to doing or saying things in a certain way?
What I would do is I would stay focused on the goal. My dream was to write a book that would help other people unlock this freedom and a sense of peace and purpose in their life, especially when we live in a world that is so fast and is so crazy all the time. Staying focused on that visual of people having this book in their hands. So for other people, maybe the dream is building a company. Maybe the dream is being the CEO of a company, you know, whatever it is. Maybe the dream is focusing on how every day, if you're a doctor, you're saving lives. Staying focused on that ultimate dream helped me in the day-to-day discipline myself to make better decisions.
I'm going to hop a few steps back when we were talking about recharging ourselves. I guess everyone has a different method or a different, you know, not everyone uses the same standard cord to charge themselves the way you do a phone. How do you go about figuring what is ultimately good for you to recharge?
That is a great question. I am a huge fan of personality tests. So there's the Myers-Briggs, there's the DISC profile, there's StrengthsFinders. For me, those were so telling because I would take a personality test and it would come back with, here's how you relax, here's how you respond to stress, you know, all these things that were so handy. And what it taught me going through this process to see what was great for me in my personality, I realized that I was trying for years to make myself an extrovert, to make myself, you know, get recharged by being around groups of people. However, it became really clear to me, I am an introvert, just pretends to be an extrovert sometimes. So it helped me accept the truth of how I recharge, which is solitude. I like to read. I like to have quiet time. That's the best thing for me. My best friend is the exact opposite. If she wants to recharge when life is too crazy, she wants to have a great loud dinner and talk until 10 o'clock at night. But no, I'd rather be in my PJs reading a great book. So it's different for everyone, but tapping into the healthy behaviors that help us recharge are key.
And it's like paying attention, because I think, as you know, you're giving those two examples, there are days when I feel like solitude is my way of recharging, and there are days where going out and spending time with someone, having great conversations, is another way to recharge. So it's really, there's no one set path, is there?
Absolutely, yeah. It's so unique. It's just like we talked about earlier with capacity in different seasons, different days, different seasons, it looks completely different. Same thing with that, and it is, you're right, being self-aware, self-accepting, and paying attention to those signs are the key.
All right, well, you said you love your phone. I love my phone as well. How do we love our phones in moderation? How do we not let it get in the way of our day?
Well, to be quite honest, I'm not sure I can totally answer that question, because I do sleep with my phone under my pillow.
Yeah, so do I.
right? So my husband has finally said, I'm a deep sleeper, he's a light sleeper, and he said, can you just turn it on do not disturb? Like, I can't have it buzzing in the middle of the night. So that's our compromise. For me, I do have a few hours during the day that I turn it off. It's right after school when all the kids are home and we're having family time.
Okay.
Because when my youngest son, who's now 7, when he was little, he would come up to me and just put his two hands on my cheeks and lift my head up and turn my head to look at him.
Aww.
And I realized, oh, I'm on my phone too much. But hello, I had work to do. And he's just playing on the playground. And I thought, well, he won't notice if I'm not looking at him. Sure enough, he did. So that was really convicting to me, just to set some boundaries. But as soon as those kids are in bed, I'm back on it.
Okay, when you talk about loving your phone, you have work to do on it. But there's also that habit, that addiction that we've developed with social media. Even if we're not active, there's just this compulsion to check it.
Well, because the apps are made that way. So I used to study psychology, and intermittent rewards, a reward that just happens every few times you do something, it surprises you. That's the concept behind the way apps are developed. So we will open up Twitter or Instagram or something else, and most of the time it's nothing, but sometimes we open it up and it's something hilarious or something insightful, and it makes our day. And that kind of triggers, that excitement triggers our brain to want to keep looking more and more to see when we're going to find something exciting. So I'm always reminding myself, like the rat, you know, in the maze, pressing the trigger, like don't open my phone. I don't have to press the trigger all the time to see what the reward is. But I still do it. I mean, the apps don't do so well because they don't know what they're doing.
So how can we not fall prey to the app makers?
Well, for me, I turn off my notifications. I have had to make peace with the fact that I'm going to have lots of red dots on my apps. And just because there's a red dot that means I have a notification doesn't mean that I have to open it right then. That, for me, has been so liberating. But it took a few months of seeing those red dots on my apps and wanting to open them right then and there to see what the message or see what the notification was. So learning to do that and learning that the world is not going to end, I don't see a Facebook message right now, was really very freeing for me.
Well, you have an entire chapter that talks about our worth and where it comes from. Mm-hmm. What does our worth have to do with the problem of being busy?
Very often we find ourselves behaving and living out of a place where we don't feel like we are enough. Because we don't feel like we're enough in ourselves, it's easy to get bogged down with other people's expectations, other people's demands on our time. when we walk around feeling insecure or feeling like we have something to prove, it's so hard to be able to kind of stand our ground and graciously say no when people make requests on our time. So what I do is I'm constantly asking myself, am I making decisions? Am I living out of a place where I believe I'm already enough? And if I can just be conscious of that, it helps me make sure that I'm honoring myself, honoring my time, and not stretching myself too thin.
How easy is it for you to answer that question?
It's very easy to answer the question if I am living in a way that I'm just trying to please other people and I'm stretching myself too thin, because then it's very obvious. If I am busy every minute of the day, if I am saying yes to responsibilities that I don't have the time, the energy, or inclination to do, then that's a huge red flag to me that I'm operating out of a sense of insecurity.
How do you get to a place of security?
Well, I think it's different for everyone spiritually. I think that's key. People who are connected with their faith, it's very grounding for them. That's what does it for me. It is absolutely staying connected in that way.
What is it about faith that helps you on your day-to-day? I mean, how does it ground you?
For me, it helps me to remember who I am and whose I am, that I am a part of the Creator's story. I am a part of something that is good, that is sacred, and that I'm meant for more than what we see here in front of us.
Okay, if we just look at someone like Steve Jobs, for example, who I actually don't know whether he was very spiritual in any way or not, but anyone who has, you know, maybe seemingly achieved great success without having any sort of spiritual faith, what are your thoughts on that?
I have often thought to myself when I've gone through really rough seasons in life that I can't imagine if I was a person without faith, because it would seem to be so hard. So I can't even wrap my brain around it. I just know that for me personally, that's the thing that gets me through the hard times especially.
That's Ali Worthington speaking to us today about how to break our cycles of busyness. This has been Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.